What's going on, people? It's your boy Izzy, and this is the Dan, Taz, and Izzy show. I am hosting solo today, as both of the co-hosts are busy doing other things that seem to be more important than this podcast. But we move. We've got a very special episode today. I believe actually it's the first ever episode that we've had with a rapper. So yeah, without further ado, let me just introduce you straight to the boy Bahino.
What's up? What's up?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm all right. Slightly tired. Just got back from work. But we're here. It's good to finally to meet after a couple of weeks of planning here and there.
Man.
We're finally in the room, in the studio together.
Man, we've been procrastinating this episode for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually made me think, I'm going to do a whole other episode on procrastination because, you know, I've been suffering. So it'd be good to kind of touch on that. But yeah, for the people that don't know, why don't you quickly give a quick intro as to who you are and what you do?
Man. So I go by Bahino. I make music. I'm a recording artist and producer. I just finished uni last summer. I studied business management at Queen Mary University. I'm based in London, here in Whitechapel, where our current studio is. And yeah, but it's a bit like the whole story is a bit longer than that. But essentially, I was born in Singapore and raised in North India and Singapore, and then I moved here in 2017. But you know, I'm British. My parents are British. My passport is British.
I know that basically there's a lot of people that are probably wondering, where's that accent from? You know, they can't really put a finger on it because you sound American, but not really. So yeah, talk to us about your childhood. What was that like, kind of living in these different countries?
Wow. Well, I mean, it might be helpful to start by saying it seems so long ago now. I'm 23, and I feel quite detached from my childhood. Not to turn this instantaneously into a therapy session, but but yeah, I mean, it was. I always tell people it was good to be, what'd you say, a kid in North India, and good to be a teenager in Singapore. I'm not God, so I don't know if it would have been as good in reverse, but it was really good to me the way I see things growing up like that. Yeah, I guess. Well, I was born in Singapore, as I mentioned, but only lived there about 3 years or less before I moved to to India. So my earliest core memories all come from India. So I'd say like that's where I proper grew up. And that was, it's just so difficult to put entire childhood in a couple of sentences. But it was good. I mean, I was different, you know, I stood out. I was like the little white kid amongst all the Indians. And that I've always felt different because of that, even coming to this country. But like, it's just made me the person who I am. And I'm so much, I feel better for it. It was also just a very, blessed, like healthy, childhood growing up, just spiritually healthy, mentally healthy. Like there's so many things I could thank God for. My parents are just, man, I hope to become half as good of a parent as my parents were, honestly, because growing up in India was a good sheltered place. They taught me about God. We lived in a community that lived out the kingdom to the best of our abilities. My parents were quote unquote missionaries. So that's what you're kind of up to in India. And then I guess when I moved from India to Singapore, it was a big, big change. Moving to what basically is a country, but also a city. Like people ask me, you know, I mean, first of all, they ask me where Singapore is, because a lot of people know about it, but don't know exactly where it is. It's just south of Malaysia, north of Indonesia. It's one of the four great tigers of the East, which is what some who knows colloquial person once dubbed it as. But basically, that's Singapore, Hong Kong, and then two other cities that escape my mind, but just a very significant place in Southeast Asia, and a very modern city now. and going from what was essentially just a small town in North India, maybe 6-7 hours drive away from Delhi, to like one of the most, you know, prominent cities in Southeast Asia, was a big change. But it, that experience in Singapore, which I tend to split up between my time in local school in the east of Singapore and in international school in the west of Singapore, it was just, yeah, I feel like because of its recency, it's even more, the effect it has on me is even more profound. But yeah, it was a good time too. Good place to be a teenager and to figure out what I like and what I don't like and who I want to become.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Something that I want to touch on that you said earlier in your answer, you mentioned that, you know, being like this skinny white kid in in this place, is it kind of made you feel different, but then it also added to your personality, like the person that you are now. And I wonder, with you kind of going down the route of music and becoming an artist, do you think that having to be different for the majority of your life has kind of correlated with your musical art form?
I'm not sure how to answer that. But yeah, I mean, I guess because I always just stood out, I was always different, it meant that I never felt like there was a predestined path or there was things that, you know, you do. Like, you do that because that's who you are, or you do that because that's where you're from. So I guess that's what's given me interests as, I don't know, I wouldn't say unconventional, but as un-mainstream as doing all this stuff, what with music and all the other things I like enjoying. And it's also definitely made me just used to being different, and I don't know, I'm not perfect. I'm trying to get better at being, I guess, an outsider, especially in an art form like this, a genre like this, because it was learning how to be an outsider growing up, but it's also learning how to be a graceful outsider in the cultural sense, in a cultural community, and that's what I'm learning as I grow. But I feel like they very much do play into each other.
Yeah.
It'd be an entirely whole different conversation about that, to be fair.
No, 100%. And obviously the reason why I picked up on that is because I can kind of relate. You know, when I was young, I was always different from the rest of my peers in the way that I thought, in the way that I talked, in the way that I moved, essentially. And, you know, I did find that kind of hard at the start, but in a way now, looking at the way that the world is and the way that culture is, I'm actually grateful for being different. Because if you look back at all of the people that did and achieved a lot, they're all different from the rest, right? Every like successful artist, if you look back at the success story at the start, they were just different from the rest. So I think, yeah, with you, I definitely noticed that in your music and in your songs, like you do have that different thing about you, which the people will listen to in a second. But before we listen to some of your songs, you know, how did you actually get into the music scene, and what made you kind of go down that route a little bit?
Man, it's a funny one, because nobody in my family, well, I don't know, my mother wasn't particularly inclined towards music. It wasn't her thing. My father plays the guitar quite well, and he led worship a long time growing up, so I'd see him play the guitar and whatnot. But funnily enough, I can't say any of that had any impact. Well, let's say, okay, it had a bit. Like, let's not downplay that. But the directness of the impact that perhaps my father being a leading worship and whatnot growing up, it wasn't as significant as when I suppose came into music myself. And how I really started out, you know, making music was, I mean, obviously first appreciating it, finding out what I liked, finding out what I didn't like. And I must say, I only really got into music when I came to Singapore. Because in India, we didn't, as kids, we didn't have access to, like, TV. I mean, we had access to TV. My parents just didn't buy it. We had no cable. Radio wasn't a thing you particularly did back then. We wouldn't exactly have one in our house. My mom used to play blues and a bit of soul and some CDs. But I didn't have any connection with like popular music really until I came to Singapore, where similar to the West, it's ingrained in a kind of capitalistic way, ingrained into society, and it is a soundtrack to a lot of things, like either to energize you or to promote something or to set a mood, like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So at that point, I felt like I really began to enjoy it for what it was, began to somewhat kind of make it my own. Man, this was 2011 and onwards when I moved to Singapore. So there was a lot of Black Eyed Peas, a lot of Kesha,
come on.
Rihanna, Eminem.
Legends.
That's kind of how I started. Really, my really just listening to music in the first place, making it my own, and using all sorts. I mean, back then I was, I dare not disclose the different ways I was getting this music before before the days of Spotify and Apple Music.
Oh my god!
But I was just eating it up, and yeah, I guess I gravitated, like as the months and years rolled by, once I was really getting into it in Singapore, I gravitated more towards rap and hip-hop and R&B. Like any good old white boy, I had my long Eminem phase. and yeah, he kind of brought me into the whole sphere. But about 2013, it would have been when Kanye and Jay-Z dropped Watch the Throne, and then Kanye went on to drop My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, is when I kind of how do you say it, grew into my own interest in a wider variety of rap music, and moved away from the
mainstream.
What you say? Mainstream, but also just the in route, which was Eminem.
and all
these like big pop collaborations back then. And that's kind of where I found myself now. It's just like I just listened to it long enough to want to be able to want to replicate it, you know, to do it myself. And I started, and I was terrible. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. while there was some talent hidden away somewhere, which a good mentor friend of mine managed to pull out of me when I started, it was pretty bad. But that's why we grow every day and get better at things.
No, I love that. I love that. I love the journey. I love how, you know, different people kind of, kind of shaped you into finding your own niche and your own kind of, way of rapping and seeing music as well. So, yeah, I would love for the people to kind of listen to some of your early stuff. Maybe back to 2019, there was a track that you had called Looking For You.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Yeah, let's play some of that now if that's
sure,
cool.
Sure, absolutely. Man, this was 2019. Do you want me to explain more after I played it? Probably.
So give a little teaser, sentence teaser as to what's about.
Just short enough to not get copyrighted. I don't even know if I've made that a thing. But let's take a listen. Oops, excuse me. I thought I was connected.
Oh, the Bluetooth went out for a little second.
Apologies.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, whilst you're fixing that, just talk about, you know, how you came to writing this song, and then we can dive into it a bit later after.
Absolutely. I was writing this song while I was living in Wales. It was a little gap year in between graduating high school in Singapore and then starting university in London. I was still really, like, what do you say, figuring out how to do music then. Mm. So it's not exactly my best work, but it is it is my debut single.
So I'm
trying to own it either ways. I'm going to start from maybe the pre-chorus, something in there.
Full throttle is true, so if you are out there, why don't you just come through?
Jeez, there you go, there you go. And I think one thing that we forgot to mention as well is that you make your own beats.
Yes, I do.
You make your own beats. Did you make that beat as well?
I did indeed.
Wow, wow! I can't lie to you. That yeah, that beat was it slaps.
Oh, thank you.
it slaps. But yeah, so looking for you, debut single. Obviously, mm-hmm. this is what kind of put you on the map, mm-hmm. If you will, the very local map.
Oh dear.
So yeah, was that about someone? Who were you looking for?
So yeah, man, I'm happy to say that by the time I had written that, I was very much over the person that I, to quote myself, was looking for. sorry if you're hearing this, but yeah, it was just how do I put this, man? I was in a not relationship. Almost relationship with a certain young lady out there back in my international school in Singapore, and essentially I realized that it wasn't going to work out the way we had hoped, and had to end it, and it wasn't particularly painless. In fact, it was quite an experience. But as a new artist, like thinking of things to talk about in songs, thinking of ways to kind of express genuine emotion, I ended up writing that song. And in fact, it's very much, what'd you say, inspired by this one song by Future that I might like to play, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
I was very much into my Tory Lanez and Future phase back then. And arpeggiated synths in this kind of wobbly kind of sound. That was what I was going for with this beat. And it was inspired by this one song.
Yeah, no, the beat was hard.
Thank you. Just when they were trying to turn Future into a pop star, but then they did a full circle, that's when I got inspired by this. Maybe quite close.
I can definitely see the inspiration that you got from mm-hmm. that song. Yeah, the beat's very similar. But yeah, when you actually like fully take in, you know, the production, I realized, well, damn, you are talented.
Oh, thank
you know,
you.
So thank so like kudos to you for your debut single. One of the other songs I wanted to kind of go through is a song called Bigger
mm-hmm.
That you released in the same year. And mm-hmm. and for me, this was what kind of grabbed my musical ears. This is what grabbed my attention. I was like, okay, it's very interesting, this artist from Singapore. Mm-hmm. So why don't you play that song and kind of talk about it as well?
Sure.
I like that one a lot.
Thank you.
It's like a slow start, and then everything just hits. The drums kick in.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. So Bigger, talk to us about that. What kind of inspired you to create that song?
Man, I'm sorry. I have to preface it by saying this is now rapidly becoming my least favorite song in my discography. Sorry to all the people out there who love it. I appreciate you really enjoying it. But man, oh man, it's not really my best piece of songwriting ever. And it's that classic artist's biggest song syndrome.
It's the most streamed song that's on Spotify.
Yeah. But you know, we steps were taken, the step, and we're gonna keep getting better. But you know, I appreciate how much people liked it. People kept reaching out and saying, "Oh, I'm listening to it in the gym," or like, "Oh, yeah, this is really, it's pumping me up." Da 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 da. And I love it. Thank you guys. Not to mention my first song that was assisted by visuals, my first music video and whatnot. It was a crazy time. But what went into it? Man. Well, first and foremost, it's one of the two songs out of the 8 songs I have on streaming platforms, which wasn't produced by me. It was produced by a talented guy called Husk, that I know from way back. My parents knew his parents and whatnot. He's based in Wales, so shout out Husk. If you listen to this, go check out his B-Stars, baby. But essentially, this is when I was living in this random house I had to rent out during summer 2019, because I had not planned quickly enough after I'd finished first year. So I wasn't actually able to record anything at home, which is my usual style. So I was going to studios, and I was in a lovely place called Roundhouse Studios in Camden. It's a great place because if you're between 16, 17, I think, and 25, you can buy a year long pass, which basically gets you in to these little small mini recording studios for like £2 an hour.
Wow.
And then the actual main studio, assisted by an engineer, for like, was it? Don't quote me, sorry Roundhouse, but like 30 or 40 for like 2 or 3 hour sessions, which is really good, basically. So I was going into that studio every couple of weeks, and that day, I get a beat pack from my friend Husk, and in it there's this one beat called No Show, and it's the beat for Bigger. And we were listening through it, and then this one No Show beat caught my attention, so I told the engineer to load it up, and I just kind of freestyled the rough idea of the hook and then some of the verses. I don't think we finished it in one go, but I think it was at least, it was, I think it was just 2 sessions though. I freestyled like a rough flow idea of the chorus and the hook, and then within like 30-40 minutes I sent it back to Husk, the producer, and he said, "Hey, you know, this is great. It was really fast as well. But what about the words? Keep going. Keep working on this." So yeah, I was like, you know what? He likes it. I like it. My engineer likes it. Let's keep at it. And then I think within that session and then the next, we had managed to finish it off. Cause I'd gone home and just wrote it. And I don't know, like, I'm not gonna make up, any kind of like inspiration. It was really just, I wanted to write some banging song. I just wanted something that sounded like exciting, something that sounded, had a bit of oomph to it. This kind of two syllable flow has just gone around in my head for like 3 years now. And I feel like it really came to its light in the first time with this song. On the verse for the next song, Parallel, that I put out, similar to it. But yeah, it was just trying to make a banging song, man.
I get it. I've been in that mindset as well, when, you know, the beat is just so fire that you just do not care about the word. You just want to get something on paper and put it out. But look, I like it. 20,000 people have streamed it, so it's obviously a very highly likable song as well. Kind of moving on from that, what people may not know is that you also do a little bit of singing, right? And I know that you've got a song that you released last week.
Yes, exactly. Last seven days ago.
Exactly. It's called You Right. And yeah, before we go into that, like, why don't you say a little bit about how you came about that song, just a little bit?
Cool. I'm just gonna. Excuse me. Great. So I had to make sure my speaker was still connected. You're right, man. Well, the last song I put out before You Write was put out in March the 12th, 2021. So that's almost a year ago. And I put out a little SoundCloud piece in September of last year, which was more like a hip-hop vibe. But I really felt like I wanted to get something out there for everybody who'd been waiting for so long. And one day, I was just on YouTube. I don't usually go on YouTube and find type beats because I, you know, make my own beats. But one day I was scrolling through, excuse me, and I find this one beat produced by this guy called Harvey Beats. I think he's like 16, 17, based in South Africa. And I just loved it. It kind of had you'll hear it soon. I'm not going to tell you what kind of vibe it had.
There you go. There you go.
But essentially, I just loved it. And the lyrics to Doja Cat and The Weeknd's song, You Right, came to mind. And I just started singing them over this like dark R&B beat. And it just fit so well.
Mm.
Like I was in front of my laptop at home and I was like, man, not only are the lyrics just hitting like perfect for this tempo and this key, but also like me right now recording them, like I'm getting some really, really good takes vocally. Mm. And it's also just the direction I want to go in, like more towards in the future, R&B and just pure singing. So yeah, I like the song and I needed to put something out. So this is what I wanted to put out.
Let's play it. That's dope. It goes to show your versatility when it comes to music, which not a lot of people have. You know, a lot of people kind of stay in one lane because mm-hmm. they feel safe mm-hmm. in one lane, and you know they are scared to explore different lanes because of the backlash that they might receive. But
yeah.
You just thought, Bonnet, let me just put my vocals on this beat and produce to a pretty decent song. So.
Thank you.
How do you feel about kind of going into two different lanes?
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I'd agree versatility is something as an artist I strive to, and it's something that I pride myself in. I've made so many different demos in so many different kind of genres and styles. But funnily enough, this song, while it is different from the previous songs, it is the whole purpose is to move towards one sound. It's to start boxing myself in.
Mm.
Yeah, and like, I don't know. For the longest time, I felt like I wanted to just show people everything I was capable of each time. And just release whatever I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
But a couple of people I know, some people I know from other labels, managers, friends, they came back with like feedback, and I was ready to listen and to learn and to improve. And what I was gathering from a lot of people is that when you find a new artist, when something pops up in your Discover Weekly on Spotify or on YouTube, and you really like the song, what do? You listen to the song, maybe save it, and then you hop over to that artist's page. And your hopes are most likely, let me hear something else like this. What else does he or she do? And if the next song is completely different, like, the chances of actually sticking with that artist, they're already low because people have only so much attention span this day and age. But they just plummet. For example, if somebody heard, like, Looking For You, the first song we played, and then went in and went into my profile and then found You Right, and they loved Looking For You, I'm so certain that You Right would not be the kind of style they're looking for.
Yeah.
And it really pains me to to have to, like, label myself in this way, because I've always literally just recorded whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm realizing slowly that it's the way to start building a legitimate fan base. It's the way to start branding myself, to start giving people the opportunity to come back and hear more. And as much as I love music for music, I also really do want to pursue it and go full time with it and earn off of it. And that's why I have to make these decisions to put myself in the best position to actually succeed in this very challenging industry.
100%.
Yeah.
And, like, just on that note as well, I think this is the main battle that a lot of artists will have when they progress in their career, right? It's that battle of, do I just release what I want to release and not care about anyone else?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it more of a, I'm just going to play whatever the people want to hear and not really care about how I feel about what I'm putting out, right? And obviously there's that sweet balance that you can achieve, but it's hard to get there, because how much are you willing to sacrifice of your own creative freedom just for the sake of others?
Absolutely.
But then at the same time, you know that it's the others that will end up paying for your career, right? So
coming to the shows,
it's like a whole circle. It's like a whole circle. So I guess it's more a fact of what are your priorities, you know? Like what is it that actually drives you to make music? I think once you get that, then you're on course to being successful. And kind of related to that in a weird way, I know that for you, music is a way of expressing how you feel.
Absolutely.
Right? And I wonder, in what capacity has music really been there for you in terms of being able to put on paper what it is that you're feeling?
Yeah, I guess it's a... I guess there's an expectation, I mean, first and foremost, there's an expectation on artists by a lot of people for each song to be some deep insight into their mind and thoughts and values and how they're feeling. And while that happens a lot, I must preface by saying that's definitely not every song. And in fact, for somebody like me, it's probably less songs than the songs that I just make for fun, to be honest.
Yeah.
Make because they're cool, I like the beat and whatnot. It's just like how I am as an artist, really. Having, I guess, started as a producer before I did any, like, singing or rapping, I still approach songs in that way where I make a beat first and then I write. And just admittedly, I'm a very lazy songwriter. When you to quote exactly what you said when you put these feelings to paper, that's the problem. I don't even put them to paper, ladies and gentlemen. Most stuff I've recorded, either demos or releases, I just freestyle, like, what comes to my head. And I do go back and change lyrics and make things reflective of who I am and what I'm feeling. But it's not exactly the first thing that pops up every time I record a song. However, it would be absolutely insane to think that I could go 3, 4, no, 20, 21, like 2, 3 years recording nothing that has any actual emotional meaning to me, because that there's no way. And there's plenty of songs in my catalog that, as that is my unreleased catalog, that do have like a lot of emotional connection to me.
Just on that as well, I think, you know, yeah, like you said, there is that expectation for musicians to put to pen what it is that they're feeling, and for us as the audience to kind of, yeah, get an insight as to what it is that's in their mind, blah, blah, blah. But I think, and you are a perfect personification of this, your process of making music is actually your outlet, in terms of how you, you know, release what it, whatever it is that you're feeling, rather than the words. You know, it's that, like, okay, making the beat, all the way to the overall satisfaction of how the song sounds. That for you is like, oh yeah, like absolutely, that was worth it. If I'm right in saying that.
Yeah, yeah, that's, I mean, that's, you're putting it better than a lot of people have tried to analyze it. That's good. It's definitely, yeah, what resonates with me. I guess it's also just the process. Like, I only have so much energy. So if I spend 20 to 40 minutes on a beat, I only have so much time left. Sometimes I just don't have the concentration remaining to do to write a really good song. I guess that separates me from other artists who they just select from like a big beat pack that their manager like found on the internet, or like they're going through like YouTube. I mean, that's great. Like, that's how people do it. I do it too. Like, there's not to bash that recording process, but there's time considerations with everything in your workflow, you know. For every artist that boasts, and I don't want to come across as it, but like, for every artist that ever said, oh, like, I make all my own beats and I record and mix and master everything's myself, you have to realize that they're sacrificing, no matter what they want to say, no matter what I say sometimes, I'm sacrificing elements that could have gone to maybe to better use, or just, you know, save more time and made more music. But it's just how it's worked for me, and I enjoy it this way. And yeah, you're right, like, just sitting down and making music in this crazy world, where I have to work 30, 40 hours a week to just cover rent.
Yeah,
it's already a lot of the emotion like coming out, you know, and me releasing it, enjoying the process.
100%. And yeah, every artist is different, right? Some people do express it by words, other people by the process. And even there, there's a little caveat for anyone listening that, you know, you may be going through some mental health problems or emotions that you can't really decipher. Try and express that confusion in a creative way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be music, but you can put that into anything that you do enjoy doing. And I promise you, it will make your life a little bit easier. Because, you know, with me, when you become a young adult and you're working all the time, there's a lot of stress that you build up, right?
Yeah, and hear that, kids?
And, like, there's a lot of, like stress, overwhelmness, all of the above, and know where to kind of put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I found for myself, like, football is one of those lanes where I can really put all of that stress in and still do it in a creative way where, you know, it's not violent, but rather it's actually very productive. So, yeah, if it's anything that you guys take from this is, you can turn your troubles into victories.
Take
that. Obviously, we could carry on talking for hours. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we didn't cover, but I'm conscious of the time. So if you have, I'm putting you on the spot here, but for all of the you know, the young rappers that are trying to come out, trying to make a name for themselves, but are finding it hard to kind of figure out their own lane, do you have any advice for them?
Man, I think, I think overall, like, be wise about it.
Mm.
A lot of people will get into music because there's a lot of glitz and glamour and it looks really cool and fun, but realize they don't actually have the level of love for it that they need, or the level of talent, or the level of commitment, or the level or even just the lower level of risk aversion that they need to do something as crazy as this, basically. I don't think in this life that you can call anything really wasted time or wasted months or years, because God like works in all of our stories. But like it's definitely a good idea to reassess what you're doing and not be afraid to reassess how you're doing things. Yeah. and whether you should move your attention towards other things, even within music. Like my best mentor growing up, he had a very successful career straight into touring across the US in this band. But at a point of time, he, at a moment when he was in his tour bus, tired from the days on the road, like worrying what he's going to eat, how he's going to spend his money, he just received the word. He was like, this I don't think this may be for me in the long term. And since then, he's kind of pivoted into being a very talented engineer. He won't say it, but I'll say for him, he's a talented engineer and music teacher, and he's been able to like live a great fruitful life with his wife in Singapore, where I met him, and in the US. And he'd wholeheartedly tell you he's all the better for it. And that can happen. And as much as sometimes I don't want to admit it, that can happen to me, it can happen to you, or it might go the other way. Just basically be able to float well with change. On a more practical note, because it seems every single young artist does not understand this, record a lot of music. Don't make 3 songs and then put one out, and then make another song and then put it out, and then make another song and put it out. Make like at least 20, 25.
Right.
I'm sorry, but make at least 20, 25 before you put your debut single out. I've made that mistake, and I've seen all my friends make that mistake, and you don't have to make that mistake.
Wow.
Signing up.
Wow. You know what? That last advice actually got to me personally, because that's exactly what I did.
Oh, no.
I made like 3 or 4 songs. I put them all out, and then now I've got nothing in the bank. So, No, that's some good, wise advice, but then also some practical advice.
Yeah, I wanted to mix them both.
Yeah, no, it's really appreciated. Thank you for coming on the show, man, and kind of talking to us about your story, spreading some wisdom as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we definitely got to catch up in like 5, 6, 7 years when you're on MTV again.
Lord willing.
But yeah, no, thanks for coming, man. And we'll catch you guys next week. We're going to get another episode in. But for now, yeah, it's been your boy Izzy. And see you later.
See you guys. Bless.